All right, we are good to go.
All right, I'd like to call this meeting to order. The Thursday, December 5th, 2024, Orange County Housing and Community Development Commission. I'd like to welcome colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. If we could first start with the pledge, if you would stand with me and honor our flag. Get on your heart, ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll proceed to with the agenda, today's meeting. The agenda contains a brief description of each item to be considered, except as otherwise provided by law. No action shall be taken on any item not appearing on today's agenda. Public comment rights are not limited and do not include the right to defame or slander. The use of profanity that causes a disturbance or disruption in the proceeding and is truly objectionable is not allowed, and it may cause us to have to take a recess from the meeting. Public comments within the subject matter jurisdiction of the commission, as such, attacks on persons who are not subject to the jurisdiction of the commission will not be heard. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Ann Nguyen is excused for today. Ms. Tracy Law is excused. Mr. Mike Albers?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Carrie Buck is excused for today. Ms. Stephanie Otto?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. James Mai? Second call for Mr. James Mai. Wayne Carvalho?
Here.
Ms. Carla Wilkerson?
Here.
Ms. Helen Smith Gardner?
Here.
Mr. Mike Frost?
Here.
And Ms. Cecilia Huck is also excused today. Chair, we have quorum, and I'd like to announce some housekeeping items before we begin. Please note that if a quorum is lost due to members leaving early or other reasons, the chair should promptly end the meeting. If you wish to comment on a specific agenda item in person, please complete a speaker request form identifying the item number, your name, and then deposit the completed form into the box located next to the clerk. To speak on matters not appearing in the agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the HNCD Commission, you may do so during public comment item. Speaker request forms must be deposited prior to the beginning of the consent calendar, the reading of the individual agenda items, the opening of the public hearing, and or the beginning of public comment item. When your name is called, please come to the podium and begin your comment by stating your name or pseudonym for the record. Members of the public desiring to speak should address all remarks and questions to the commission. Speakers may address the commission on up to three occasions with 3 minutes allotted to the speaker per occasion. Staff in attendance, all staff noted on the agenda are in attendance.
Thank you. You know what, I'd first like to just remind the commissioners, for the purposes of the recording, when you do speak, to just mention your name. First item four is the approval of the September 26, 2024 minutes. Have we received any public comments on this item?
Chair, we have not received any request for public comments for item number four of approval of minutes.
All right.
Carla Wilkerson, I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Sure.
Stephanie Otto, second.
Okay, motion made by Commissioner Wilkerson, second by Otto, to approve the minutes. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. We have no presentations. We'll move on to public comments. At this time, members of the public may address the commission regarding any items within the subject matter of the jurisdiction of the commission, provided that no action shall be taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Speakers will have 3 minutes to address the commission, and the clerk will run the timer and announce when your time is up. Do we have any public speakers?
Chair, no request to speak on approval of minutes have been received.
Okay.
I'm sorry, on public comments, my apologies.
All right, moving on to the consent. Item one is the 2024-25 payment standards for Housing Choice Voucher Program. And I'll ask January Johnson to come up for a brief overview. Thank you.
Good morning. January Johnson, Orange County Housing Authority, Housing Manager. So for consent item number one, on an annual basis, HUD requires that housing authorities update their payments and review and update their payment standards based on HUD's newly released fair market rents. HUD releases a new fair market rents on an annual basis in about September of each year. And those fair market rents are based on the 40th percentile of gross rents for the metropolitan area for a standard unit. And then they ask the housing authorities to evaluate their portfolio of tenants paying rent and establish payment standards between 90% of that fair market rent to 110% of that fair market rent. And then the housing authority is obligated to take a look at all their tenants and find out how many of them are paying above 40% of their income towards rent and adjust our payment standards based on that. And so HUD doesn't want to see tenants, more than 30% of our tenants, paying 40% of their income towards rent. And that's what we did. We evaluated our tenants' payments and adjusted our payment standards based on that. And what you're seeing here is those newly adjusted payment standards. There wasn't a lot of adjustment done because a couple years ago we made a huge change in our payment standard. And so we haven't seen rents increase much more. They're increasing a lot, but they're not increasing so much more that our payment standards have to increase as much as well, because we made 2 years ago a pretty large increase. So they're kind of keeping up with the rents. So that is the payment standard.
Chair, I actually, this is January, Mike Frost, Dana Point. Two questions. Is it fair for me to think of it in terms of if our payment standards go way up, the number of vouchers? Good.
Absolutely correct.
Okay. You okay. So we kind of don't want it to go up that high.
That's why that's a balance. You want to make sure that there's a nice portion of your tenants that are paying a reasonable rent. So that's where that 30% of our tenants not paying more than 40% of their internal rent. That's where that balance comes from. Because you're right. The more we spend on rents, the less voucher holders we can assist. And so it's really a balancing act between how much we're spending and making sure that our tenants can afford the rents of the community.
And one other one, I'm embarrassed, I should know this, but that is the payment that we are going to provide to them. That's not necessarily what the full rent is, right?
It's the maximum amount of the rent that we, or the portion that we can pay, and it is not the rent amount. That is correct.
Do we ever care what the actual rent amount is?
Yes, we have to make sure that anytime somebody submits a request to rent a unit, we evaluate that rent amount to make sure that it is fair for the community and that our voucher holder isn't being charged a higher rent than, say, another fair market tenant is. And so we call that rent reasonableness. And so anytime somebody wants to rent a unit, we have to make sure that that unit is renting for what is reasonable for the community. So we do care for that reason. We also care. A tenant can't move into a unit and pay more than 40% of their income towards rent, so the tenant has to technically income or qualify for that unit. And so we call that affordability. We have to make sure that the tenant can afford the unit that they are looking for. So both of those tests have to happen before we can actually start paying rent.
Great, thank you.
Just curious, that 40%, is that just for rent or all utilities included? I'm sorry?
That includes
utilities.
Includes.
I did ask too. Oh.
All right.
And that was
Yeah.
Yeah. And Stephanie Otto, I have a question too. So you said gross rent. So that's not just, that's the total rent.
Correct. So it's a contract rent. And then last meeting, I came and provided you guys with utility allowance changes. Mm-hmm. So it'll be the gross rent, which is your contract rent, plus that utility allowance that we calculated for that house.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank
Anyone
you.
Else?
I'm Colin Gardner. I have a question too. After you've lived in the unit for more than a year, does that 40% go up? Or is that the absolute maximum?
No, you are correct. Okay. As soon as somebody moves into a unit, that 40% threshold or requirement is no longer applicable, and so that person can continue to remain in the unit. We don't ask anybody to move if their portion of rent exceeds 40%. We do have conversations, though, with our clients, because we have several instances where somebody's been in a unit for a long time, and rent increases come in, and you're starting to see their portion of rent getting higher and higher, and as they get, you know, 70%, 80% of their income, it becomes a conversation about whether or not it's affordable for them. But we would never ask anybody to move. We know how hard it is to find units out there, and so to force somebody to go into the marketplace when just because they are choosing to pay more of their income towards rent is something that's part of the choice program. So.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Now, anybody here to speak on this item?
Chair, no request to speak on consent item number one have been received.
All right, I guess I'll move the, I guess it's just a receive and file. Is there a required motion here? Okay. All right, thank you. Moving on to item two, which is the 2024-25 payment standards for emergency housing vouchers. January.
January Johnson, Orange County Housing Authority, Housing Manager. So I kind of gave you guys a brief summary of what payment standards were in the previous consent item. When the emergency housing voucher program came into being, we understood that the population that was being served there, or HUD understood that the population being served was much more challenging to find housing because of, say, background or income challenges or credit barriers. And so HUD allowed, unusual for HUD, so HUD allowed for housing authorities to establish two separate payment standards, one for the emergency housing voucher program at a higher number, and then one for the housing choice voucher program, in order to assist people who are coming into the assistance through this program so that they can have a better chance of being able to find a unit or that income qualify for those units with a higher payment standard. So that's what we did. Now, over time, since we have people already having moved into those units, and since this is a finite program, it disappears. As a voucher holder loses their assistance, that voucher doesn't get reassigned to somebody else. It is lost from the program. So the program is designed to shrink over approximately 10 years. As these people are already housed, the need for this higher payment standard is diminishing because people have found their homes, they're now establishing credit, they're establishing a stronger rental history, and so the need for that higher payment standard is going away. We have a secondary housing voucher payment standard for the emergency housing voucher right now because in order for us set higher than our housing choice voucher payment standard, if we wanted to lower it, we would be putting our tenants, the people participating in this program, in a financially challenging position because we would be lowering the amount of money that we're giving, serving them. So we're going to continue to have two payment standards until such time as the housing choice voucher payment standard reaches the level of the emergency housing voucher payment standard, and then we'll eliminate the emergency housing voucher payment standard and combine them into one. But we don't want to reduce it until become equal so that we can help our tenants that are already housed. So what you're seeing here is the emergency housing voucher payment standard. The only difference with this payment standard from this year from last year is the zero bedroom. And the reason why you'll see a difference there is because HUD does require that 90% to 110% of the fair market rent, and our previous zero bedroom was below 90%. So we were required to adjust that down.
Any questions?
Helen Gardner, resident. I have a question here. payment standard for a shared housing. Can you explain to me what is shared housing?
Sure. Shared housing would be if somebody, in easiest terms, somebody rents a room. So not all housing authorities allow for shared housing. Orange County Housing Authority does allow for shared housing. So if a tenant finds somebody who's willing to rent them a bedroom, they can rent that bedroom and we will use the program to pay for their rent. But because they're not renting an entire home, they're renting a portion of the home, that's why the shared housing is at 75%.
So two recipients of vouchers could rent, for example, together?
Okay.
But the voucher holder could not rent out
correct.
Another room.
Okay, that is correct.
We're good. All right. Any speakers on this item?
Chair, no request for public, I'm sorry, no comments received for consent item number two.
All right. Thank you. We'll go ahead and receive and file this item too. Thank you, January. Moving on to item three, which is the proposed schedule for next year's meetings here. I'll turn it over to Julia for a trip.
Yeah, we come annually to adopt the meeting schedule. You'll note the schedule, but I believe we, Wayne, you have a proposal?
Yes, I do. You know, it's typically on the fourth Thursday of the month, and we're dark in November, so we usually have our meeting the first Thursday in December, like today. But obviously the last couple of years, the SCAG meetings are held the same week. So the fact that we're trying to get one meeting in 2 months, I just suggest we bump it to the second Thursday on the 11th next year. So instead of the fourth.
December?
December 11th, yeah. So we have one at the end of October, and then understanding it's December 4th would be ideal, but since we have an annual SCAG meeting that happens during this week, there are a lot of elected officials that may be attending that over a year, so I just suggest we do it on that second Thursday.
So that's a motion, Wayne?
That is my motion, unless there's any discussion or objection.
I'll second it and I have a question. I noticed the address on St. Andrews. Are we going to move back?
Yeah, it's up to the commission. We've held them here, but we can go back. We are reserving this room. So I think for the first meeting in January, we'll probably come back here and then make a decision on if we're moving back to St. Andrew.
Okay.
Well, maybe just to throw it out is to the commissioners, is everybody fine with either coming here or going to where the staff is at, basically?
I mean, I think it makes sense to go back since the staff is there. And yeah. Stephanie Otto. My comment is, it seems to me to make sense to go back since the staff is there. We'll use their time more efficiently.
Carla Wilkerson, are we making a motion on that as well?
Well, I think just for discussion.
Oh, are we discussing?
Yeah. You don't have to move it. It's as stated on there. So I appreciate it's sort of a directive to staff. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I would echo the same thing. Going back would be fine with me. Doesn't matter.
The parking's probably easier too.
Yeah, a lot easier. Carla, how do you think?
I think it fine. I think it's actually probably more convenient without having to go through a parking structure.
All right. Mike Frost, yeah, whatever for the location, I'd be up for whatever staff wants. We got to drive up here anyway.
Yeah, we will.
So January, where would you like us to
we'll
be?
We'll go to St. Andrew.
In January? Okay.
This is Julia Bidwell, director,
all right,
answering the question. Yes, we will go to St. Andrew.
Okay. All right.
So do we need to vote on that?
First, no speakers, I'm assuming. Madam Clerk?
Chair, no request to speak on item number three of the consent calendar.
Okay, so again, I'm moving that we adopt the calendar as presented with the one modification to December 11th, 2025.
Mike Alford, second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All right, let's.
Mike Frost, staff's okay with December 11th, right? It's kind of all the
yes.
same. Okay.
We checked it out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? All right, see you then. Motion passes. All right, moving on to discussion calendar items. Item one. Since I am involved, I will recuse myself. I can't vote on this, so I'm going to turn it over to Julia to take it over from here on this item.
Absolutely. Julia Bidwell, Director of CHCD. I'm going to hand this over to Mike Alvarez for the item, and he is also going to give the report for the Ad Hoc Selection Committee.
Okay. What we have before us is a... Oh, wait a minute. Let me ask right away if there's any public comment. on this item that seem to be?
No requests to speak on discussion item number one have been received.
Okay.
I apologize. I should have read the title into the record.
Go ahead.
Discussion item number one is the Ad Hoc Selection Committee recommendations for at-large member, receive ad hoc report, and vote to recommend appointments. And I'll hand it to Mike Alvarez for the report from the ad hoc.
Okay, we had an ad hoc committee selection for at-large members regarding interviews of applications for at-large for this commission. As a background, as a result of the interviews and written submissions provided by the applicants, the Ad Hoc Selection Committee recommends the following candidates for appointment as the two at-large commission members, pending approval by the Board of Supervisors, acting as the Board of Commissioners for the County of Orange County Housing Authority, for the meeting 2-year term ending June 30th, 2026. And those names were Wayne Cabral, that as you see here, and Dr. Tiffany Mitchell. I do want to say that there were others that we interviewed on the committee that were outstanding. As a matter of fact, there was a younger lady that had applied that was very impressive. And it was very hard to not pick her, but we all encouraged her to reapply because we were very impressed with how she had interviewed. Very, very good. Okay, with that, we move to approve the recommendations of the Ad Hoc Committee for at-large members and recommend to the Board of Supervisors acting as the Board of Commissioners of the Orange County Housing Authority and to the Chair of the Board of Supervisors the following candidates for appointment as the two at-large Housing and Development Community Development Commission members, and that's Wayne Cabarlo and Dr. Tiffany Mitchell. I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay, Stephanie Otto.
Stephanie Otto. Second.
Marla Wilkerson, second the motion.
Great, thank you. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay.
And Wayne,
you refuse
yourself.
I abstain.
Wayne is
abstain.
Refused.
One abstention.
Congratulations, Wayne.
Yeah, you made it.
All right, thank you. Moving on to item two, which is the Ad Hoc Selection Committee recommendations for tenant members receiving the ad hoc report and vote to recommend the appointments. I'll ask Julia to do an overview and Commissioner Otto to report out on the Ad Hoc Selection Committee.
Thank you, Wayne. Julia Bidwell, Director, OC Housing Community Development. Yes, this is the item for the Ad Hoc Selection Committee recommendations for tenant member, and I'll hand it over to Stephanie Otto to report out for that ad hoc.
Thank you so much. Stephanie Otto reporting out. As a result of the interviews and or written submissions provided by the applicants, the Ad Hoc Selection Committee recommends the following candidates for appointment as the two tenant HNCD commission members, pending approval by the Board of Supervisors, acting as the Board of Commissioners of the Orange County Housing Authority for the remaining 2-year term ending June 30th, 2026. Helen Smith Gardner and Carla Wilkerson. So we are recommending that you approve recommendations of this Ad Hoc Selection Committee for tenant member and recommend to the Board of Supervisors acting as the Board of Commissioners of the Orange County Housing Authority and to the Chair of the Board of Supervisors to file those candidates, Helen Smith Gardner and Carla Wilkerson.
All right, thank you. Madam Clerk, any comments, public comments on
Chair,
this?
Chair, no request to speak on item number two. Dr.
All right,
Lucy.
Thank you. I'll have a reminder that Helen and Carla can't vote on this, but I would entertain a motion.
I'll move the recommended action for these two fantastic people.
Wonderful. I'll be happy to second that. Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. We have four ayes, four votes.
And
two abstentions.
I know.
Where are you?
Good luck, everybody.
Yeah. Item three, moving on, election of officers. So Cecilia has sat as chair this past year or two, as vice chair. So this is an item, we'll have the clerk explain the process used for the election, this annual election, that we, and to confirm that we have any public speakers on this. Madam Clerk?
For the election process, I'll open up the floor. No, Chair, I apologize. No request to speak on item number 3, election of officers.
Okay.
And for the election process, I will open up the floor for all nominations before I call for the vote. Nominations can be made for the chair first or as a slate for both chair and vice chair together. Each nomination must have a motion and a second, and each nominee must accept the nomination. If a nominee declines, the motion will be considered withdrawn. After the nominations are made and accepted, I will take a vote for each nomination or slate. The nominee or slate to receive the majority vote will be the winner. If the first election is for chair only, I will follow the same procedure to elect the vice chair. I will now open the floor for nominations for chair or for a slate of both chair and vice chair. Do we have any nominations?
I would nominate Wayne for chair, assuming you want to do it.
Thanks for the offer. I had already declined.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
I will nominate whoever else wants to do it.
Well, who isn't here?
It looks like it's Cecilia.
So Cecilia has the record. I can read it into the record now. Cecilia, I'm willing to be the chair of the HCE Commission if nominated. As I'm unable to attend the meeting on December 5th, I'm submitting this in writing.
Okay, well, I would like to go ahead. If Stephanie would agree to serve as chair.
Oh my gosh.
Would you accept it?
Wow. I'd be happy to accept it. But I don't know if Cecilia wants to do it.
Fine, either both her and Wayne expressed they were fine.
And Wayne, you don't want
to
do it?
And, you know, just to give some background, all of us have had the opportunity.
Yeah.
I have, and Cecilia has. I think it's nice to share the wealth.
Excuse me, this is Helen Gardner, and no tenant representative has ever been a chair or a vice chair, FYI.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We've asked.
I would have, I've had the opportunity.
You don't want to do it?
Starting a doctorate program.
What is the commitment, Stephanie Otto, what is the commitment? Like,
This is Julie Bidwell, Director of HCD. Well, you have to talk to me more.
Okay.
On a monthly basis.
Disastrous. Yeah.
That's a benefit.
On a monthly basis, basically going over the agenda and running the meetings.
Okay, well, I'm honored to do it unless somebody else doesn't want to do it. I mean, I'd be happy to do it. Thank you.
Okay.
For the honor.
I second that nomination.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Mike seconds it.
Wonderful. So,
you just call for a vote.
Yeah. Are there any other nominations? Okay.
Okay.
I can go ahead and call for the vote.
Yes.
All right.
For chair.
This is to have Stephanie Otto as chair for next year. Wonderful. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. So we'll have a separate nomination process for vice chair.
Vice chair.
I will now open the floor for nomination of vice chair. Do we have a nomination?
Carla Wilkerson, I nominate Helen Smith Gardner for vice chair.
For vice chair?
Yeah, I'll second that.
I would accept that.
Wonderful. Do we have any other nominations? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. Motion passes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That was fairly simple. And we can let Cecilia know.
I will text her.
All right. All right, moving on. No public hearing items, so we'll move on to staff reports. First from the Housing Authority, January Johnson.
Orange County Housing Authority, Housing Manager. Last time you had to hear from me today. For staff updates, right now
We are excited to be partnering with the Orange County Social Services Agency, who operates a program called Operation Santa Claus, which is a year-round donation program dedicated to providing new gifts to and toys to children in foster care and to children of low-income households. And so we have partnered with them to distribute toys to children 12 years and younger who participate in OCHA's Family Self-Sufficiency Program. And we've had 65 people who have requested toys and will be coming by and picking up these toys at our offices, which we're very excited to be able to offer. For those of you who aren't aware of what the Family Self-Sufficiency Program is, it's an incredible program that we don't really talk about that often because the Housing Choice Voucher Program gets a lot of our attention. But the Family Self-Sufficiency Program is available to anybody who does have a Housing Choice Voucher and wants to participate. They can sign up with our case managers and they sign a 5-year contract to establish goals to help them towards self-sufficiency. Those goals can be education goals, employment goals, and our team will work with them to help meet their goals. We also have funds available to help them with childcare, if that means they're going to school and they need to have additional funds for childcare, if they have car repairs and they need to be able to get to their employment, they can ask for additional funds and we will help supplement their income with these funds. Additionally, as they make their way through the self-sufficiency program, as they earn more money, instead of them having to take that from their income, we will take what that difference is, that amount of money that they've earned and how much more they'd be paying towards rent, and put that in an escrow, interest-bearing escrow account for them. And so over the course of that time, if they meet all their goals and they graduate, then we issue them a check, and they can use that check for whatever they want to use it for. We have found that there are often times that we're issuing checks in the tens of thousands, which is really fantastic news for those families. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to leave the program, because the program does allow for people to have a livable wage and still participate in the program once you're a part and made eligible. However, a lot of our families, rephrase, not a lot, but several of our families have been able to take that money and go and use it towards home ownership in our home ownership program. And so we do have about a handful of people who have been able to purchase a home because they've taken their escrow funds and they've used that as their down payment, and they've been able to use their voucher for that home purchase, and then we'll help pay a portion of their mortgage from the voucher. And so that's really the most exciting outcome for these families who are able to participate in the Family Self-Sufficiency Program. So it's kind of an opportunity to tell you about the FSS program while also letting you know about the Operation Santa Claus. If anybody does want to donate to Operation Santa Claus, you can year-round, and you can visit ssa.ocgov.com, Operation Santa Claus. And if you'd like, we can also send you guys out flyers at the end, if you have any interest in.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. That's it for me.
Thank you. Next would be community development. Mr. Fee.
Good morning, Commission members. Craig Fee, Community Development Manager. Today I'm going to update you on what we have called the 5-year consolidated plan. The 5-year consolidated plan is called the COM plan. It's a planning document that was required for the use of HUD funds, for the community development block grant funds, ESG funds, which are the emergency solution grant funds, and home funds. The fiscal year 25-29 COM plan assessment is currently being updated for the next 5 years and is due to HUD on May 15th. The updated plan will identify the current housing and community development needs in the Irvine County and sets forth a strategic plan for addressing the identified needs. It also satisfies the minimum statutory requirements of the CDBG, home, and ESG programs. A consultant, Veronica Tamman Associates, is assisting the county in compiling required information for the COM plan. Consultant and staff have conducted 2 service provider meetings and 4 out of 5 community outreach meetings. These meetings basically are conducted in participating cities or unincorporated areas to get community input as of what is high priority needs in their neighborhood. So we actually go and we have an exercise where we explain what the COM plan is to them and what it means to them, and we give them the ability to vote on a wide selection of needs in the community, and they can add them to what's important to them. And we take all that and compile that from low income communities from these meetings. And we also have surveys which we sent out all over Orange County, participating cities and corporate areas, that the people living in those neighborhoods can vote on what is important to them. What the consultant does is they take that information and a lot of other statistical information around the county on what's going on, have needs changed in Orange County as a whole and low-income neighborhoods as a whole, and that basically leads to setting the high priority needs for the next 5 years for the consolidated plan. So once we set those goals in the consolidated plan, that is what we will fund. We will tell you how these are the high priority needs that we will fund. I mentioned the survey. The survey can be found at www.ocacd.org/community development. So it's on our website. You can see what the meetings were, and there's one still pending. You can see the surveys. It explains what the con plan is. You can look at the last 5 year consolidated plan as well. Any questions?
Chair. Do we, sorry, Chair Frost from Dana Point. Is it all residents or are city's planning staff involved in those also?
Both.
Okay.
We actually have a survey for residents. We also have, we also conduct the two provider meetings, which we have service providers for all of Orange County that provide service for low-income individuals. And we ask their input as well. And then we send out surveys to our cities that participate in our program, and they have their own separate survey of what is important in their city and what they would like to see funded in their cities.
Okay, great. And then Veronica Tam takes all that back and comes up with an overall plan based upon all that stuff.
Correct.
Great, thanks.
If I may, Julie Bidwell, HCD Director. It's great to get that input. I'm glad you asked about the city's. One of the examples we give is that sometimes things are present of mind, like fires. And the community may say, I need a fire hydrant at 5th and Main. But the community planning department will already know that that's in part of their public work schedule. It doesn't need to be prioritized for CDBG funds, which are right, there are not that many CDBG funds to go around. So we take that input from the city, we take it from the community members, and also then with the service providers who represent underserved communities or homeless individuals that we might not get to engage completely. And so they take all of that into consideration when developing those priorities. And then when we have a draft of that consolidated plan, we will be bringing it here for presentation as well, so you will be able to see that. And what to keep in mind, and Craig keeps mentioning participating cities and unincorporated areas. So I know some of you represent incorporated cities that have their own CDBG, but it's great to see for all of you, some of you represent the smaller participating cities in our urban county, and then of course, any individuals, you may work with service providers. So we'll bring it here for presentation, but that's how we take in the input and then fix what might be the high priorities.
Makes sense.
I have a question. Stephanie Otto, was this the recent, I think it was Laguna Hills forum that you guys had?
Laguna Woods.
Laguna Woods?
Yes.
That was, okay.
Yes.
All right. And so are you done with the community input portion of
one,
the?
We have one more left. We had to unfortunately cancel it because of a facility issue, but we're rescheduling it.
Oh, okay. And where is that going to be?
Basically, we try to have it at the AICC, which is the Anaheim.
Oh, so you're doing Anaheim, okay. You did like a North County and a South County.
We did. We try to get it all over in participating cities or unincorporated areas. So the Anaheim Independencia is actually a colonial in an unincorporated area.
Mm-hmm. And how do you outreach, because I think Dana Point, for example, is one of your cities. So how do you get Dana Point folks to know about the Laguna Woods location?
We send all the city contacts, city community development managers, and city managers information on all of this, all of the all the meetings and copies of the surveys.
Okay, and hopefully they push it out to their community, right?
Yeah, quite a few cities advertise it in their areas.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
We had a nice little media kit with social media flyers, newsletter posts that they could put in to their community newsletters or put on their websites. We still are taking surveys from community members and city staff until December 31st. Mm-hmm. So I know I had sent an email out to you all with the information on the consolidated plan. So if you know of residents, or if you know of service agencies that know of residents that live in any of the participating cities or unincorporated areas, mm-hmm. you can promote that as well.
Mm-hmm. Does the media kit include like a social media thing? I would love to get a copy of that. I'm happy to promote that.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any questions?
All right. Thank you, Greg. Go with Michelle with Housing Development.
Good morning, Michelle Zadiba, Housing Development Manager with OC Housing Community Development. For my report, I'll start off with our Project Review Advisory Panel. We did have a meeting in October 17th. Where we brought three projects for consideration. One was Costa Mesa Senior in the city of Costa Mesa, which is 70 units. And the developer is Jamboree Housing, requesting 34 project-based vouchers and $2.5 million in capital. Jamboree Brea PSH, which is in the city of Brea, 39 units total. They are requesting 38 project-based vouchers and $5 million in capital. As well as Wise Place, which I think you've seen at this point maybe three or four times already. But they are coming back to request a capitalized operating subsidy reserve for their Mental Health Services Act units that are not covered by project-based vouchers. And that's a request of $2.6 million. For Costa Mesa Senior and Jamboree Brea PSH, those are for threshold, and so PRAP will be seeing them again for underwriting. Once we complete the review, but all of the projects so far look really well, look really good. We've been working with the city as well on tracking their entitlements, as well as funding commitments and any of the city approvals that they need to move forward. In addition, staff is also working on the 2025 Notice of Funding Availability right now. And we will be bringing forward a set of recommended changes to policy and process to this commission after it goes through our project review advisory panel. So we are hoping to be able to bring this back maybe to the commission in January for review and consideration before we bring it to the board for consideration, so that we're able to release it to the development community. Our time frame right now, we're hoping to be able to release it in March, consistent with prior years. And just to give a little bit of background on why we're doing that, we typically on an annual basis review it to make sure that it aligns with state and federal guidelines and requirements and regulations. We also ensure that our NOFA implements current industry standards and best practices, as well as we're working through the NOFA, we get a lot of questions and comments, and so we're also clarifying our process and policy just to make sure that it's also user-friendly. And so it's an annual review of our existing policies and any new policies that we want to implement. In addition to that, we are also gearing up for HomeKey Plus, which is technically a round four of the HomeKey program, although they've changed it a bit since they're using the Prop 1 funding. We did release a request for information and qualifications in November, and we did receive 9 responses. And so staff is currently reviewing them for threshold right now, and then we will have a panel review them to qualify developers. Our intent is to be able to solicit interested developers who want to do a home key project with us, be able to work with them on a property to acquire and develop, and then submit to the state during the open application period, which is from January to May. And I think that's it with my report. Not sure if anyone has any questions on any of the items.
Any questions? We do have a meeting scheduled next week, correct?
We do. We have our next meeting is December 12th. Yes.
No questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
I'll turn it over to Julia for the Executive Director's report.
Hi, good morning. Julia Goodwell, Director of OC Housing and Community Development. This morning, a couple of items. The Orange County Housing Authority came out of the pandemic with a staff vacancy rate of over 25%. Happy to announce that as of today, OCHA has reduced that vacancy to 4% and has more staff than any time in our recent history. OCHA has not only significantly reduced our vacancy rate, but we've also been able to add positions to keep up with the growth of our housing programs. OCHA has taken steps to improve staff retention as well, including working with a third-party vendor to create a comprehensive training program that will be rolled out the first quarter of 2025. OCHA also received our final Section 8 Management Assessment Program, or CMAP, rating. CMAP measures OCHA's performance and is HUD's version of a report card for public housing authorities. HUD evaluates OCHA's performance in several areas, including accurate rent calculations, housing quality standard inspection processes, and adherence to processing timelines. OCHA received 150 out of 145 points, 5 points higher than last year and the highest possible score a housing authority can achieve.
Congratulations.
That's awesome.
Yeah, 150 out of 140.
Yeah, exactly.
For a housing authority to be considered a higher performing housing authority, the housing authority would need a score of 90% or higher. With a score exceeding 100%, OCHA will retain our status as a higher performing housing authority for the 17th consecutive year.
Oh,
One reminder today, Jessica sent all of you a reminder to please complete your ethics training. It needs to be a certificate showing 2 hours, and I believe that the training is only available online until December 31st if you want to take the online training. Just a note, at the end of the year, I can't believe I'm saying happy holidays, but happy holidays, and thank you all for your service to this commission. And that's the end of my report.
Julia, on the ethics report, do we have to renew that every year, or are some of us on it?
So it is biannual. However, they recently changed it, so this year everyone had to do it, the 2024 reporting year. So if you received an email from me this week, then you are required to do one. If you didn't receive an email, that means that you completed your certificate. Yeah.
I think it's every 2 years, right?
It is every 2 years. 2024, and then we'll do it again 2026.
Okay. Thank you. All right, member comments. At this time, members of the commission may comment on agenda or non-agenda items, ask questions of staff, give direction, provided that no action shall be taken on non-agenda items unless authorized by law. Any comments from the commissioners?
Stephanie Otto, happy holidays to the commission and the staff.
Mike Frost, actually, sorry, I have a lot of questions today for whatever reason. I think this is a January question, but I saw in our packet that there was some marketing effort towards potential new landlords, and we're always doing that, right? I was wondering, for all our vouchers, do we aim for some sort of overage as far as potential landlords? Does that make sense?
So you mean like having landlords in a kind of referral list so that we can send it to clients or something?
Yes,
like that?
Yes. And is that what, do we aim for a certain percentage over our total vouchers? Does that make sense?
We do not. It is really just like the program. It's a choice program. So we encourage landlords to participate, and we're constantly reaching out and participating in like the apartment association or having different landlord engagement opportunities. We do have a referral listing for our current voucher holders that landlords can put their rentals on, and we do have that available for our current voucher holders. So we encourage landlords to reach out to us, and we can advertise their units. But we don't have a percentage that we're looking for. Like if we have 10,000 vouchers, we're looking for 10,020 landlords or something like that. We don't have that. It's a constant goal of ours to reach out and continually seeing landlords coming into the program. We do have quite a few landlords in the program, and we see strong retention. Very few landlords drop off the program once they participate. And so that's really one of our biggest goals, is making sure that once they come in, that they stay happy with the program and that we are supporting them as much as we can, because they're an important part of the program.
Would we ever potentially have a situation where we have more vouchers than we have landlords that are willing to do it?
I would say anecdotally, yes. Yeah. I think that's pretty much the situation right now. We really do, and I think that's across the board. It's not necessarily vouchers. I think in general, you have more renters than you may have units available, and that's part of the reason why you're seeing prices, rental unit costs increase, is that you have a lot more demand than you have supply. Yeah. And so that's for everybody. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people looking to rent the same unit. And so the landlords are really in a sweet spot right now, where their units are very desirable, where across the board, voucher holder or no, it's a lot it's very challenging right now to rent a unit. So I don't think it's because they're a voucher holder. I think it's because you're just a renter in the community at the moment.
Okay, so we have vouchers out there basically being unused. Is that fair to say? I got a voucher, but I can't find it.
There are a number of reasons why somebody doesn't use or is unable to use a voucher. It's not strictly related to not being able to find a unit. You have to, this population, landlords are still entitled to do their own screening, right? And so they're still entitled to make sure that whoever they're renting to is somebody that they want to rent to, because they need income qualifications or they need credit qualifications, things like that. Because of the populations that we serve, there are going to be people who have challenges there. And so that's why the project-based voucher program or the affordable housing is such an important component, is because we can find housing for that population.
Got it. Okay,
so
let me go that way.
You're going to see people who have a challenge using their voucher, not strictly because there's not landlord participation, but because of just the challenges that population may be encountering.
Okay, thanks.
Carla Wilkerson, and even if they're veterans, challenge for acceptance of a voucher on the landlord's part. Mm-hmm.
January Johnson again. I will say this, there are a lot of state laws, or there the state law requiring that you cannot discriminate based on source of income has made a significant change in landlord participation. And once that law passed a couple years ago, we have seen a lot more new landlords coming online, asking about how the program works, wanting to see the benefits of the program. So I think that's where you're going to see legislation really helps drive participation, because it makes it a lot easier for, a lot harder for landlords to deny someone if they have a voucher. And so it really makes the playing field a lot more equal. And we're seeing a lot of participation now.
Mike Alvarez. Mike, just for your information, the county staff goes to a lot of trade shows where all the landlords are notified either through the Apartment Owners Association, associations like that. So our staff goes out with their dog and pony show, I guess best way to put it.
Yeah.
Their layout that they put out to educate the landlords that this is available and how the vouchers work and the ones for the veterans work and all that. So they're, it's a real education process that has to happen too, on top of all this. Just so you know.
Thank you.
Carla Gardner, tenant representative. I can speak to history because I have had a housing voucher for a lot of years. And when I initially started looking for a place to live, the comment was, we don't take housing vouchers. I mean, it would just be like click. you know, and it was, we don't let those people in our units, we don't want those people here, we don't want to be affiliated with those people. And that attitude has changed a lot over the years, to at least being considered. At least you can get onto the being considered. But if you're dealing with the people that we're dealing with, and you have to have 3 or 4 times the rent as your income, so if you're renting a place for $2,500, how much money do I have to be making per month in order to even qualify for that unit? It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a really lot. It's way a lot more than I'm ever gonna make, for sure. So, but what did change was when they passed that law that said you can no longer hang up the phone on me and say, we don't take those people. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had been selected because I have a voucher, which is the wisest thing to do, especially COVID revealed when people couldn't pay their rent.
Yeah.
You know,
I would think landlords would be barking up the trees to get guaranteed rent. Even if your tenant isn't paying their part, at least you're getting, you know, 50, 60% of the rent. So over the years, like you probably read a book, but I've seen a lot of attitudes change, and I think a lot of it had to do with COVID. After COVID, post-COVID, landlords had a whole different attitude.
Yeah, it's true.
January Johnson, I have to concur with what Helen's sharing, is that it, absolutely, you see landlords, when they were having challenges with people paying their rent after COVID, they did start to see that there is a benefit of, we've been saying that benefit.
Yeah, sure.
It's in all of our dog and pony show. We've been expressing, hey, we're guaranteed income. You know, you have somebody who has very little income, they lose their job, or they have a change in their circumstances. We pick up that difference. Yeah. We're there. We're that support or for the landlord. We're also a support for the landlord if they have challenges. If somebody isn't paying their rent, we're contacting that tenant. We're reaching out. We're guiding them into to making sure that they're complying with their lease agreement. We are really in this multi-pronged relationship, both with the tenant and the landlord, and we've been saying that. But as soon as COVID did kind of open, I think, people's eyes, and the law really did help a lot, changing the perspective from landlords. But we continue to reach out and express these are benefits.
In January, I would add that when they passed that law, they also made a statement, which changed things, that now that income that I make from HUD is now reportable income for the purpose of renting a unit. So that if you have a $2,000 payment going in, you can put that under your income column, which helps you then to qualify also. That was a big tip when they changed that.
Any other questions? Well, thank you, because I just heard a lot of things too, so thank you for the information.
So if you know a landlord, again, this is January Johnson, anybody, if you know a landlord, please send them our way. We will not turn any landlord, but almost any landlord away.
Any other commissioner comments? I just want to thank everyone also.
Happy holidays.
Julia, especially your staff. I mean, this is the reason for the season. We didn't meet in November, but thank you and your staff for what you do. I know it's
making our job easy.
So at our next meeting, turn it over to Stephanie down at the other location, correct? So I'll go ahead and adjourn if there's no other thing. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Happy holidays, everybody. Enjoy your family, friends.